Good morning, Allison.
Good morning. Nice to see you. So, on the COVID front, things are relatively stable. So, nationally, cases, hospitalizations, and deaths are all largely stable across the country, and we're seeing a very similar picture in Washington State. In Jefferson County, our case rates are actually slightly down this week compared to last. So, we've diagnosed 5,271 cases of COVID-19. That puts our case rate at 690 per 100,000. We do have a relatively high percent positivity at 17%. So certainly that is not all of the COVID-19 cases in our community. We do have one of our residents currently hospitalized for COVID-19 for a total of 141 hospitalizations so far in this response and 30 deaths due to the virus. In neighboring Clallam County, we've diagnosed 14,662 cases of COVID-19 with a case rate of 562 per 100,000 and a slightly lower percent positivity of 12%. Similarly, we have one Clallam resident currently hospitalized for a total of 421 hospitalizations. We do have one new death to report in Clallam County. For a total of 119 deaths. That was a gentleman in his 90s. He was vaccinated and received one booster, but had not received his second booster yet. He also had multiple underlying comorbidities, and he and his family decided to transition him to comfort care. So on the COVID front, not a lot of new news. Still the same recommendations we've talked about on this program before. So wear a high quality mask in indoor settings to reduce transmission and to get fully vaccinated and boosted, which is three doses for everyone under 65 and four doses for everyone over 65 and everyone who's immunosuppressed. I wanted to take a brief moment to update on the situation with monkeypox, because that one is certainly heating up in the national sphere as well as in the state. At this point in Washington state, we've diagnosed 118 cases of monkeypox. In the nation as a whole, we've diagnosed over 5,000. So currently the Washington state outbreak is smaller than much of the rest of the country, but we do anticipate that it will grow. Towards the end of the week, two cases were diagnosed in Kitsap County. So we do think in the near future, we are likely to see cases in Jefferson County as well. Quick reminder, monkeypox will present as a new painful rash that is atypical for you. It can be anywhere on the body. And generally, it's quite painful, raised, red, and then eventually scabs over. Can look a lot like chickenpox or shingles. Can look a lot like herpes rashes as well. So if you have a new atypical rash for you that is painful, please do contact your healthcare provider so that we can get you evaluated and make sure that it's not monkeypox. If you believe you've been exposed to monkeypox because someone in your close personal sphere, primarily a partner, has been diagnosed with monkeypox, let us know because we do have vaccine available for those who have been exposed. Monkeypox is spread by contact. It's not like COVID, so you can't get it by casually passing by someone. But you can get it by close skin-to-skin contact that is prolonged with another person. Primarily, we are seeing that in the context of sex, but we've also seen it with other prolonged skin-to-skin contact. And we can talk some more about monkeypox as we move further into the program, because I know we got some monkeypox questions from the KPTZ listeners as well. So with that, I'm happy to take any questions from our commissioners.
Great. I have one simple one. Thank you. I'm sorry, my computer was rebooting, so I might have missed at the beginning, but I see the test ascertainment rate is something that I want on a regular basis. Can you repeat that or tell me what the test ascertainment that you have for Jefferson County is?
Sure. So I have not calculated the formal case ascertainment rate for this week, but I can make that a regular part of what we do. But with our percent positivity up a little bit in the 17% range, I do think that previously we had been saying probably about a 50% case ascertainment rate, probably drifting down closer to a 30 to 40% case ascertainment rate at this point. I think one of the primary drivers of that is school. So with school being out, we're just not catching as many pediatric cases. And so sometimes when we see that dip in cases, it's not truly a dip, but just a dip in ascertaining those cases. Overall, I would say that our COVID case rate in Jefferson is likely stable from last week.
Great. And then I guess, can just public service, can you reiterate where people can get free tests? We had a cold go through my household last week that was not COVID, as we continue to test and prove. It's a great resource. I just want to make sure people have those free tests.
Yeah, so you can get COVID-19 tests if you're in a position to purchase them. They're sold over the counter at really all of our major pharmacies. But if not, we have free tests available at the public health department. We also have them available at the libraries and at some of our South County fire departments as well. So there's a lot of places where you can go ahead and access free tests. There's also the Bookmobile. So if you don't have a library branch in your community, if the Bookmobile comes to you, the tests come on that as well.
And they come fast if you order them in the mail.
That's true.
So from Say Yes, yeah.
Yeah, so you can order them directly from Say Yes COVID test from the state. And they do come usually within about 48 hours. Mm-hmm. So that's a good option as well. I would recommend if you're out of tests in your house and you don't currently have a cold, go ahead and order some tests so that you can have them there when you need them. You don't want to be trying to find them when someone's sick. You can also order them from the federal government as well. That takes a little more time, tends to be more about 5 to 7 days, but they're still readily available tests from Say Yes COVID test that you can have at your home. And actually, this is a good opportunity. One of our KPTZ listeners asked a little bit about expiration dates of antigen tests. Generally, at this point, we say they expire about 18 months after they were manufactured. So on any test that you see, there should be a manufacture date and an expiration date. Many of them still have the old timestamps on them that said they expired after 3 months or 6 months. But we now know they last at least 18 months. So if you look at your manufacture date, add 18 months to that, you can definitely be in the clear. And in truth, they likely last much longer than that, as long as they've been maintained at reasonable temperatures, i.e. room temperature, not frozen, not in a hot car. So if you've been maintaining your tests in reasonable temperatures, even beyond that 18-month threshold, if the control line goes off when you test it, they're likely still good tests.
Can I follow up on that? Because in my flurry of tests last week, I had one box that the control lines kept coming in super faint. So I just wasn't sure. So we had enough from sayyescovidtest.org, which I really recommend, to do them again. But if you have a faint control line, what does that mean?
If you have no control line at all, I would not count on that test. But if it's very faint, if you've done tests before and it's looking atypical to you, that I think is a good indication to try a different test. Because if it's the control should show up bright and solid. And so if it's barely getting a control, you might miss a lower viral load case.
Thanks, Dr. Berry. Kate, do you have any questions?
I do, yeah. And it's interesting. I'm in Washington, D.C. right now, helping my son move. And he had to go to urgent care this morning. And it was a little shocking. Everybody who came in to urgent care was saying they thought they had COVID and needed to get tested. And it made me really grateful for where we live that that has not been the case, partly smaller population. But you know, it just made me think, like, how much of a risk are healthcare settings when, you know, we know that sick people come in and people with COVID need to get treated sometimes. I've always heard you say that healthcare settings are pretty tightly regulated, require masking and such. But is that much of a risk when, when folks are needing care and going in to healthcare settings? Should it make other people question their decision to seek healthcare?
Sure. So can't speak to the situation in the Washington, D.C. healthcare settings, but here we thankfully have had very good communication between our healthcare settings and our public health department. And so places like Jefferson Healthcare have very stringent requirements on how they manage kind of airflow in the treatment settings, how they manage patient populations. And they do a good job of identifying if you have COVID-like symptoms and moving you quickly into a room and out of spaces where other people might be. And so I think the biggest risk in a healthcare setting is not the staff, but the other patients. And so it, when facilities manage that patient flow well, it doesn't need to pose a risk to other people seeking healthcare. And I think you can feel very confident that it's safe to seek healthcare in Jefferson County. They've worked really hard on making that happen. But yes, people come in sick. And so if you are, if you're high risk and you're accessing healthcare for either COVID symptoms or not COVID symptoms, the most important thing from a patient perspective to keep yourself safe is to wear a mask when you go in. So if you're having to hang out in a waiting room because there are healthcare shortages, making sure that you're wearing a high quality mask during that time is really important.
Thanks, Dr. Berry. I don't have any follow-up questions, although I'm glad that my family has to this point still escaped contracting COVID, and it did cancel my week, my normal summer weekend of crabbing, because someone in my crab team was exposed to COVID. So we just canceled it. And I'm like, oh, COVID kills crab camp. Should be the headline. Anyway, so, but I saw that there were a number of KPTZ questions. So I'd like to leave most of the time for those, of course.
Sure. So the first one asked, how long are N95 masks good for? And can I leave it in my car when not in use? Is COVID transmissible by touching the mask after wearing it? And so as far as how long N95s or KN95s, any of those masks, how long they last, they do have technical expiration dates. But during the early days of the pandemic, when we had a mask shortage, we really did some testing on how long they can last. And if unused, the only thing that makes them fail to work is if the elastic no longer holds them tight against your face. So the mask itself doesn't really degrade over time. So there's no real formal expiration date on those. When it comes to using them for continuous use, we did study this in a healthcare setting. So for ICU nurses, that they could wear them for 12 to 16 hour shifts before they started to lose their ability to filter, primarily because they lost the ability to hold tightly to that person's face after 5 days of continuous strenuous use. That's different than what we see in the general population when we're just wearing ours to go to the store or to go to work. So I would say for your own use, for your N95, you can wear it as long as it fits your face well. If you start to see that it's not fully adhering to your face, or certainly if it's getting soiled in any way, then it's time to go ahead and trade it out. The other thing you might feel is the fibers get torn a bit the longer you wear it. And so if you're starting to feel it, it like weirdly tickles the inside of your face, that's likely that the fibers are starting to fail, and it'd be good to go ahead and switch out your N95. But you can use it for quite some time if you're only using it intermittently. As far as transmission from the outside of your mask, that is a technical risk. So when we were looking at this in the healthcare setting back in the early dark days of COVID, we really were worried about that, where the taking on and off posed a risk of getting COVID on your hands. It's an unlikely risk if your mask has been sitting out for a while. It's more, we were looking at it in the context of going in and out of positive ICU rooms for COVID. But when in doubt, wash your hands, and then you can't transmit COVID through touching other things. So low risk from touching your mask. The next person asked, I have a friend who contracted COVID-19 and started showing symptoms even though the COVID test came up negative for the first 3 days. Was she contagious during those first 3 days? I would say generally not. So likely, statistically, your friend was probably vaccinated based on our community. And so your fully vaccinated folks tend to mount symptoms even before they become contagious. And those symptoms are actually their immune system responding to fight the virus. They're not seeing a significant spike in viral load, the thing that can transmit to other people, as early in their infection. That those first symptoms that they were feeling are really their own immune system. Then once they turn positive on that test, that's when they became contagious. There's a little bit of a window on either side of that, so it's not impossible that they were contagious before they turned positive, but generally in those days before they turn positive on their test, they are not contagious. So hopefully that helps any kind of contact tracing plans you guys are doing at home. We talked a little bit about expiration dates for your tests. So if you have expired tests at home, I would say go ahead and use them. If you're seeing the control line is either weak or non-existent, then go ahead and get some more. If you have, all of your tests are after that 18-month post-manufacture date, go ahead and order some more from Say Yes COVID Test or from the health department if you're sick or exposed, and we'll go ahead and take care of you so that you can make sure you have good tests available. This next person asks a very valid question, which is, does the scientific literature about other coronaviruses and past pandemics give us any clues about how long COVID-19's endemic phase could last? Could we be social distancing and avoiding indoor crowded spaces for the rest of our lives? So I don't think that we will be social distancing for the rest of our lives. On average, pandemics, the pandemics that have come before, have lasted about 2 to 3 years before they've settled into a phase where we no longer see these significant surges of virus that really affect our community as a whole. And that is about where we are with COVID. So we do think that we're likely to settle stably into the endemic phase over the course of this year, and then move to kind of this new normal. We don't think that COVID is going away. It will be with us, but it doesn't have to affect our society the same way. So what I would say as far as how it affects our lives, it depends a lot on your baseline risk factors and the risk factors of the other people in your home. I recommend for all people that we wear masks when we're in indoor areas. If you are very high risk, so you're undergoing chemotherapy, you are significantly immunosuppressed, there are some higher level things you need to do. Make sure you're really wearing a high quality mask, so KN95 or higher, in indoor settings where other people are around. And I certainly would avoid crowded indoor masked settings if you have those kind of high risk conditions. But otherwise, I think it is reasonable to start to bring back into our lives as much as possible of the things that make our lives feel livable and meaningful. We've been doing this for so long that we need to find a way to live with this virus. We should take reasonable precautions to minimize the impact on the vulnerable people in our communities and on our own families. But it's also similarly important to take part in those activities that give life meaning. So think about what those things are for you and how to make them as safe as possible. At this point, I don't recommend avoiding public spaces or staying in your home. It's too long to do that. But there are ways that we can make that public engagement safer. And primarily that's being up to date on your vaccines and wearing a high quality mask. Now that the weather's better, when it's not too hot, moving activities outside can always make them safer. But there's a lot of meaningful things you can do within that context. This last person asked a couple questions, one about monkeypox, and then they just asked some general personal questions too. I'll save the personal questions for last and we can wade into monkeypox a little bit. So as far as monkeypox goes, this person shared that they have a friend who's gay and who's very worried about monkeypox and is saying basically they're going to abstain from in-person sexual activity for the foreseeable future to try to prevent getting monkeypox. And so that brought about a good question, which is, how can we protect ourselves and our community from monkeypox within reason? So monkeypox is currently disproportionately affecting the gay community, but not exclusively, and it will not stay that way. Right now it is, but being gay itself is not a risk factor for monkeypox. Anyone can get monkeypox. We are seeing that it can be spread through any close skin-to-skin contact, and it can be spread through any sexual activity, regardless of your identification. And so while we want to make sure and get good messaging out to the gay community, because there is that disproportionate impact right now, I want to be sure that everyone understands that anyone can get monkeypox. And just being gay does not put you at risk of monkeypox. Ways to reduce your risk include avoiding high contact, close interaction. So there was an outbreak in Europe at a large scale indoor dance party, because as you can imagine, if you're really close shoulder to shoulder and tank tops, you can spread monkeypox. So I don't recommend large scale indoor dance parties for a variety of reasons, monkeypox and COVID. But primarily the biggest way to prevent transmission of monkeypox in your day-to-day life right now is around limiting sexual exposures. So you are very unlikely to contract monkeypox in a stable monogamous relationship. The primary goal there would be minimize the total number of sexual partners. If you are not in a stable monogamous relationship, a key important part of starting sexual encounters with a new person is having open and direct conversations with that person. So talk about their risk factors, talk about any STIs they might have, talk about if they have any new rashes or if they're feeling ill. If your partner has a new rash or is feeling ill, definitely don't engage in sexual activity until they've been evaluated. If you have a new strange rash, any of us, please do contact your medical provider to get that checked out, because we can test, we can treat for monkeypox now, we can treat for other rashes that might take place. So the same things that make sex safer generally also apply to monkeypox. Limit your total number of partners. Talk to your partners about their health status prior to having sex. If and when you do have sex, make sure you use protection. So condoms are very important in preventing all kinds of STI transmission and preventing some types of monkeypox transmission as well. And the last question I had from KPTZ was a person who said they wanted to get to know me better outside of just as a person. So they asked some simple personal questions. One was, what is my favorite color? It's yellow. The other one, what is my favorite season? Autumn. And the other one was, what is my favorite animal? And it's the Olympic marmot. And so with that, I'm happy to take any other questions from our commissioners.
I mean, the sky's the limit now, right? you broached this dam. I'm not sure if you want to talk to person, but I'll refrain for now and really consider my personal questions for you.
Yes, very personal questions are still off the table, but simple things like favorite color are okay.
Do you like a bright yellow or a mellow yellow?
I like kind of dandelion yellow.
It's a very calming, right? It's also very common in hospitals.
Yeah, it's a good color.
Hey,
I'm not sure if you covered, Dr. Berry, if the vaccine for monkeypox is available yet in Washington State.
Sure, let's talk a little bit about vaccines. So the vaccine for monkeypox is called the Jynneos vaccine. There is limited availability of Jynneos. It's available right now only for people who have known exposures to monkeypox. So if you believe that you've been exposed, say your partner tested positive, or you were at a gathering where multiple people have tested positive, go ahead and give us a call and we can talk to you about your risk and figure out whether or not you were truly exposed. We would like to get you vaccine, and we can access that at Jefferson Public Health, but only for people who have been exposed. We don't currently have enough vaccine to vaccinate people who are at risk in the community. But we likely will by around the end of August. And when we talk about at risk, I mean people at highest risk. And so right now that is primarily kind of some subsets of the population, people who would otherwise be eligible for PrEP treatment, but we are not quite at that level of vaccination yet. We are likely to get to that point around end of August, and that will be primarily through the public health department when we can do that. For the general population, we don't have monkeypox vaccine available. I would say for the general population, your risk of monkeypox is low. And if you practice all of those safe practices we just talked about, limiting sexual partners, talking to sexual partners before you have them, using protection, and then avoiding very crowded, close in-person indoor activities. If we do all that as a general population, the risk of monkeypox is relatively low. And so that's why we're not vaccinating the general population yet, and also because we don't have enough vaccine to do so. We're also not vaccinating healthcare workers at this point because this is primarily a contact infection. And so with proper PPE, there's no reason for a healthcare provider to contract monkeypox. And so we're mostly working on the PPE and with the healthcare community. One other quick thing on monkeypox. So there is a treatment for monkeypox that is an investigational treatment, but has been quite effective for the cases found so far, called TPOX. That is also in short supply, but we can help people access that if they test positive in our community as well. So if you have a new rash, it's really important to go get evaluated and tested right away, because that one, similar to Paxlovid, has a short window of efficacy, and we want to try to get it to you as soon as possible. And it's a process to get it right now because there's not enough in the country, but we will get it for you. All that to say, if you have a rash, go get seen. If you think you might have been exposed, give us a call. We can help you. We have some tools to help you, but we can only do it when people self-identify to us, because we don't have enough right now for the community as a whole.
Thanks, Dr. Berry. Any other questions, Greg or Kate? Well, I like bright yellow. Okay, well, thank you so much. Willie, I don't know if you're off camera, but I don't know if you have any updates for us. How'd we fare with the heat over the last few days?
Yeah, no major updates for me other than we look to be out of the heat. We're in a little bit more of a cooling pattern. We might actually get some rain midweek, which is very welcome this time of year. We do look to warm up a little bit come this weekend, but nothing like the last heat wave that we saw. Otherwise, I just hope everyone stayed safe during the heat. It extended a little bit longer than we initially thought during the forecasts, but fortunately, the worst of it was right up front. Cooled a little bit from there and then just hung around for a couple of days. So out of the woods, the last heat wave, again, more typical of a summer heat wave than the heat dome last year. Very thankful for that. Otherwise, no updates for me other than a plug for the All County Picnic on the 20th. Looking forward to that. So that's all for me.
Thanks, Willie. I'll be interested in the corn report. How much corn are we going to order for the picnic?
Yep. I will let you know come next week, maybe the week after, as we are still taking signups from our organized neighborhood. So I do encourage folks, if you want to get your neighborhood involved in a picnic in place, or if you don't know if you live in an organized in prep neighborhood, now's the time to reach out. We'll get you hooked up and we can get you some free corn with that famous chimichurri sauce. So looking forward to it.
Thanks, Willie. Okay, so,
Hey, Willie, I'm wondering just how if you can give us a little update on if anything's happening yet on the volunteer corps. I actually met a local in prep neighborhood leader the other day who, gosh, just seems like great for kind of for this volunteer corps that we've been talking about. And I'm wondering if you can give us an update on where that is or what's the timeline.
Yeah, volunteer corps, which aspect specifically? We're always recruiting for volunteers here at DEM, and we have a few different volunteer programs in different kind of states. So anything specifically?
Well, I guess maybe I'm just not remembering with very much specificity. I thought that there was even staffing that we had supported to kind of build a deeper bench for the next emergency. And this is just and I'm wondering if there are opportunities if we or other people meet folks that have, you know, system skills or, you know, nursing skills or whatever, that we can put them in contact just to make sure that they're on the list and ready to deploy. I guess what's the process right now?
Yeah, so the process would be to get in contact with us at DEM. We background check all of our volunteers and register them as emergency workers under the State Emergency Management Division. We have a couple of different programs that we can always use help in. One, our incident management team here at DEM is, other than our professional partner liaisons, entirely run by volunteers. So those are the volunteers who work out of the EOC in our planning or logistics sections. And so if they have good planning skills, organizational skills, we can always use help actually running and operating the EOC. And if you're looking more for kind of field level response work, we have a program called CERT, or the Community Emergency Response Team. That is a FEMA educational program that teaches you some basic skills like first aid, search and rescue, and a few other things like that. We've more or less paused that program during COVID as it requires some in-person training, but we're getting that spun back up come fall. We also have a program called our Medical Reserve Corps. So you mentioned someone with a nursing background or a medical background. The Medical Reserve Corps was something we didn't have prior to COVID, but we built it up on the fly to help meet the need with our vaccination clinics. So whether you're a retired doctor, nurse, other medical skill, we're building up that program to be able to potentially run future vaccination clinics and respond to future emergencies with a core of trained medical volunteer professionals to assist there. In terms of the staffing you supported, we are hiring for a volunteer coordinator with DEM. We actually made an offer to a candidate this past week and are currently going back and forth with them. So we hope to have them up and running here relatively soon to support all of these different volunteer programs. So in the meantime, I'm still the main point of contact for anyone interested in volunteering. It is somewhat of a choose your own adventure program. So depending on their interests, their skills, we can find a home for you. I mean, even if that's with an in-prep who they aren't formal DEM volunteers, but getting organized within your neighborhood, meeting your neighbors, talking about your skills and how you're going to help each other post-disaster, that's always an option as well. But no matter what your skills, what your interests are, if you want to help the community become more prepared, we definitely have a spot with you. So spot for you. So put them in touch with me.
Great. Thank you for the resummation. And I think Q would be great in the incident management team. So I'll reach out to you offline and of course, you know, sign me up for whatever corn duty is needed. I always enjoy Perfect. That. Nothing Sounds like giving good. Away delicious corn to engender goodwill.
Exactly. That's always the most popular part of the picnic is free corn. So hard to beat that.
And that's great news about the volunteer coordinator, Willie. Thanks for that update. Okay, it's 10:17, so I think we can end our COVID update for the week a little early and send KPTZ listeners back to Bob Marley, and maybe we'll take a recess until our hearing at 10:30. Does that work for you, Kate?